Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. I've been living here in West Michigan now for 40 years, and I really do enjoy it. And I've grown quite proud of the kind of inclusive community we have become, in most cases. Room for improvement? Of course. But boy, have we grown in so many ways. Case in point, a situation about a quarter century ago that still has me cringing. If you're listening outside of West Michigan, let me give you a quick geography lesson. To the south of the city of Grand Rapids sits the town of Byron Center. When I first moved here, it had a strong farming culture and was known for a restaurant with a big chicken in front of it. Nowadays, you'll see less farming and more typical suburban development. And in the mid-90s, you'd also notice a kind of stereotypical small-town thinking that was rather regressive. You see, the town's high school had a music teacher who developed a program that was just outstanding. This gentleman was admired by students, faculty, and families alike. That is, until it was discovered that he had pledged himself to another man in a wedding-like commitment ceremony one weekend. When word got out that he was gay, all hell, and I do mean hell, broke loose for Jerry Crane. A man who just wanted to bring out the very best in pupils he was charged with inspiring. As you might guess, area churches played a large role in this story, on both sides of the issue. It had been a long time since I'd thought about Jerry Crane, but recently I received an email from a listener who alerted me to the fact that a book on the Crane story and the debacle at Byron Center High School was soon on the market. A note contained the contact information of the author, Christine Yared. So, emails were exchanged, and here we are. Ms. Yared is in the studio with us today. The book is Private Love, Public School. And let me share a little bit about its author. Christine Yared is an attorney, writer, educator, and activist. For over 30 years, Christine's work is centered on LGBTQ, legal, political, and social issues. Christine has taught about and fought against discrimination based on identity, gender, race, ethnicity, and against sexual harassment. Her cases and advocacy has been covered by numerous media outlets, and she resides here in Grand Rapids, and we welcome to Common Threads, Christine Yared. Hi, Christine.
Hello. Thank you.
So tell me this. Why, after all these years, did you decide to write a book on Jerry Crane and Byron Center High School?
Well, it's been quite a number of years that I've been working on it. I got involved and met Jerry through this controversy, and I was a member of our local gay and lesbian community network. And it was through that I got to know him. We got involved. And several years after that, I thought that this needs to be documented and told.
I think that's quite correct. You know, I met Jerry Crane briefly. I'm going to bet if you were involved in that community back in the 90s, did you see the play Jeffrey?
I did not.
Okay. I was wrong. You know about the play?
I'm trying to remember.
Okay.
I'll tell you a little.
Okay. Because this is quite interesting. Jeffrey was a play. It was on Off-Broadway. It was later made into a movie. And Actors Theater here in Grand Rapids produced it probably the 95 season, I'm guessing. And it was the first play that really focused on gay culture in New York City and the AIDS crisis. It was a big deal. And I remember being at auditions, because I'm a local actor when I have nothing to do, and I believe I was the only straight male auditioning. I could be wrong. Huh. All right. And I noticed a lot of people whom I didn't recognize. Mm-hmm. That is to say, usually when there's auditions, you just know everybody because, you know, you got an acting community and, you know, oh, he's going to show up and she's going to show up. I'm thinking, I don't know these people. And some of them, the way they auditioned, I was gathering, okay, you're not somebody who does this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But they were all gay men who wanted to be a part of this because to them it was monumental. It was more than just mm-hmm. a play. It was a statement, and it was in some ways their story. Although there's probably a little bit of difference between being gay living in New York in 1995 and gay living in Grand Rapids in 1995.
Correct.
Regardless, they still thought it was their story. And I ended up getting cast. And, you know, I kind of felt like, you know, I just beat 10 black men in auditions to perform Othello. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't deserve to do this, but I did it. And it was a wonderful experience. And I will tell you this. In the midst of the rehearsal process, my wife's a theater person too. She said to me, you know what I'm noticing? I go, what? She says, you're dressing a lot better going to rehearsals than you normally do.
Excellent. You learned some things.
I did. I got fashion tips. But I probably shouldn't have gone into as much detail as I did. But Jerry Crane saw the play, and afterwards, I got a chance to meet him after the performance he went to, and I expressed my sympathy. This was after, I believe, he left the school, but it was really, really soon. And I just remember that moment talking to him and knowing that I was talking to someone who really made an impact.
Mm-hmm. He did.
And he obviously did. So let's summarize for people who are not familiar. He was a music teacher, Byron Center High School, and all of a sudden, he's got this issue that he didn't have before. And it starts, I think it starts, if I understand this correctly, it starts when he shows up to school with a wedding ring. At that time, of course, it was a commitment ceremony ring. And my question, Christine, if you know, didn't he think that would cause people to ask questions? Anybody, straight or whatever, if you're not wearing a wedding ring on Friday, but you're wearing one on Monday, wouldn't students ask questions about that?
Well, I need to back you up, because that wasn't what set it off. What set it off was, so he had a commitment ceremony, and a student went in, it was in Meyer Gardens, and went and took a program, walked out. The next day, the Sunday after his ceremony, he got calls from some students and parents that were telling him that a copy of that program has been distributed throughout the community, Sunday morning churches. And so when he returned to school, people already knew about it. And it was in that context that a student said to him, knowing what had happened, you know, what's that ring on your finger?
And the school, the principal at least, you mentioned that someone called, wait a minute, is this before or after? You write in the book that a parent called to ask about Jerry's orientation, right?
So that was earlier, that there were calls in the end of the school year, that prior school year, and then, you know, questioning that. And then in the beginning of the school year, he was called into the administration building, and they basically said, we know you're gay, or they said homosexual, and are you planning to get married? So he was presented with that first day of school, and then heard nothing until, you know, when he returned after the commitment ceremony. And it was then that, you know, which he never anticipated, that it would be, his program would be, that someone would obtain it and make photocopies and distribute it throughout the community.
Any idea how somebody found themselves at Meyer Gardens on his commitment ceremony day?
Yeah, so I think the people who were complaining that they thought he was gay earlier, what had happened was he was making musical arrangements for the ceremony, and he called someone that he trusted, and that person couldn't do it, but they happened to mention to some other people that they were invited to do that, and one of the people who heard that was someone who was very anti-gay. And so it was started with that family, and then the student was a part of that. It was a former student that he had. And so certainly that was an intentional act. They found out that they knew because someone was asked to be in this, to play music in the ceremony.
When the principal, his last name was Skilling back then, when he got the call from the parent asking if Jerry was gay, what is the most responsible thing that he could have done?
Well, I think that he should have said that a teacher's personal life has nothing to do with their ability to teach, and I'm not going to answer questions about that.
But obviously,
instead, he said he gave some answer to say, "I don't know, but I'm going to watch. I'll look out for it."
It sounds like he was really in the "don't ask, don't tell" camp. Is that correct?
I would say a little bit more than that because when he said, "I'm going to watch for it," then to me that told me that there was some affirmative action he was going to take to look at Jerry through a lens of, okay, is this guy gay? And I'm going to look for it. Because if he thought it wasn't a problem, which was, the don't ask, don't tell, was that, because it's not supposed to be used against you, then he wouldn't have said, I'll look into it or I'll look for evidence about that.
And back then, technically, it was illegal to be in a gay sexual relationship because of sodomy laws. Am I correct?
So at that time, under Michigan law, there was there's sodomy laws and criminal laws that said that that made it a criminal act for consenting adult men, and there was a related act for law for women.
But wouldn't that affect, was sodomy legal for straight couples?
It was.
Okay.
Yes.
So continue.
Yeah. So, and it wasn't until several years after that, into the 2000s, that the U.S. Supreme Court held that those types of laws are unconstitutional. But it was accurate that in the mid-90s and into the early 2000s, many states, and in fact, the Supreme Court looked at that issue in 1986 and upheld a Georgia law that made it a crime to engage in sodomy, again, two adults, consensual, criminal act in the privacy of their own home.
Right, right. And so this obviously put Jerry and his partner's name was Randy.
Correct.
That put them in a challenging position legally because of this law still being on the books, right?
Correct. Now, it wasn't being enforced, at least, directly in Kent County. That wasn't something they were doing. They certainly were. There were a lot of arrests of gay men that were improper, in my opinion, legally, that were taking place when, men were at parks together and there'd be these sting operations where undercover police officers would go up and start a conversation. And it, many of them were, like an entrapment type of a situation.
The same thing that they do often with women on the streets.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. With me today is Christine Yared, and she is the author of Private Love, Public School, Gay Teacher Under Fire. In the mid-90s, we had DOMA, which unfortunately was passed and signed into law in the Clinton administration. What nullified that? Was it the Supreme Court? Was it the Windsor case that nullified that?
Yes, and again, well into the 2000s. So DOMA, it stood for Defense of Marriage Act, and the argument being that if same-sex marriage took place, it was somehow a threat to heterosexual marriages. And it basically said that if a person got married in a particular state, if a particular state decided to recognize that marriage, if you went to another state, that state did not have to recognize it. And then it also precluded people who were legally married in a state from getting any of the federal benefits that are available to married couples.
You mentioned in the book that at least back then, I don't know about now, but back then, parents who sent their children to Byron Center schools thought that they were sending them to Christian schools. How, what did that mean?
Yeah, and I heard that from interviewing some parents who had children in the school. So that was their conclusion, not mine. And what it meant, so different examples, you know, when this happened, one of the teachers started reading Bible verses, you know, in the sex ed class.
From Song of Songs?
Not that. They brought a speaker. Again, there were a lot of things done once this came out, and they brought a speaker to the school that was basically there to talk about Christianity and how it related to our history. And then he started, you know, going off on anti-gay rants, and he knew. In fact, supposedly he was told not to get into that issue, but he did. And this is, four students, and they knew who the man was. They knew he was national. They knew what his rhetoric was, and yet they had him come in and speak in the midst of Jerry. And basically, all Jerry was accused of is being gay. He wasn't accused of doing something wrong. They went into an uproar because now they had proof that a teacher in their building was gay.
And do you know, outside of the controversy surrounding Jerry, was there any blowback from parents who were offended by that kind of behavior in school? That is to say, the idea that it's a public slash Christian school. Do we know if there was a...
In other words, people who were supporting Jerry...
No, forget about Jerry
side.
For a second.
Okay,
just talking about the school, yes. The personality of the school, do we know if there were parents who were offended by the Christian nature
yes.
of the school?
Yes, there were. There were. And you know, from talking to those parents, they like many people, it's a trade-off. And so there were things good about that they liked about the school educationally, and they lived in that area, but very upset with in their mind, and from what I've concluded at that time, they were blurring that distinction of separation of church and state.
Talk about Jerry's faith, because he was a man of faith. And at one point, it surprised me in the book, you write about him once considering the ministry.
Yes. So he was raised in Mount Clemens, Michigan, and he was raised in a very conservative religious tradition, which included being anti-gay, I'll say, you know, in those terms. And so he went from Mount Clemens to what is now Cornerstone University, used to be Grand Rapids Bible College. And that's, he came to Grand Rapids to attend school there. And music was a big part of his life. And he was also considering the ministry. And so he went there. During that time, he began to struggle with his own sexuality. And then he searched, he was a very serious man about his religious beliefs. It meant a lot to him, was a huge part of his life, of who he was. And initially he went to a organization that's purpose was, it was like a support group for gay men, but the intent of that organization was to try to convert gay men to so to speak, become
reparative
straight.
Therapy.
Yes, yes, in a group setting. And he didn't stay at that long. And then he found an affirmative group, AWARE, which was a local, it was basically Christian, primarily Christian orientation. And again, kind of a support group type setting of gay people who were Christian and hurt by their religion, upset with the religious beliefs they were raised with, and struggling to make sense of that. And it was through that process that he learned about Westminster Presbyterian Church, which, several And I'm using the word gay because we're talking about a gay man in this book, but certainly what I'm talking about applies LGBTQ across the board. But he found that church, and that became a home for him that that spoke to his religious needs and spirit.
And talk about his suicide attempt.
And, you know, other than to say that this happened during his time at Grand Rapids Baptist College, and that that was during that time where he was really struggling with that pushback. And I can't speak a lot to what was in his mind. I was not able to interview him at the time I wrote this book because he had passed away by that point. But you know, it was one of those personal struggles that's very common to people. I am lesbian. You know, LGBTQ people go through those struggles, and certainly religion is often one basis for that struggle. If you have a firm belief and you were raised in a sense of you believe in an eternal life and you've been told you will not get that if you're gay, for example, people struggle a lot with that. And some people reject their religion because of that. Others who desire to hold that are very hurt, very upset, and you know, a huge obstacle to get over emotionally.
What was the relationship he had with his parents like growing up, and then after he embraced his orientation?
You know, growing up, and again, I don't know a lot. I was not able to interview anyone in his family. But clearly, you know, from what I can tell, he was very active in his school, active in music, active in organizations, which to me indicates that he had a happy, fulfilling childhood in terms of his school experiences. And then after he came out, the experience was very negative, and his family, you know, rejected him because of that reason, that he was gay. And again, based on their religious beliefs, they thought that was a sin and wrong. And so that was another huge struggle that he had to live with.
This is kind of off subject, but when I read this, I go, I got to ask Christine, you said something really nice about Mount Clemens, about the architecture, or what was it that was?
Yeah, well, that it was interesting, the history, and it was apparently a place that celebrities came for. They had the
mineral baths,
yes, and they had, yeah, interesting, you know, the architecture was interesting, and it drew a lot of people to that community, and I found that very interesting. I learned about that through my research of the book.
Yeah, I'm from Detroit, and because I was on the west side, I didn't get to Mount Clemens all that much, but I never heard anything like that. That
is very interesting, yeah.
It really is. What's kind of fun in reading a book written by a local author, of course, is all of the touchstones. Like, oh, I know that place.
Mm-hmm.
And in this book, I know those people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the persons mentioned, whom I knew way back when, but did not know, or perhaps I don't remember, having a relationship with Jerry, is Leanne Arkema.
Yes.
She plays a considerable role in his life.
Correct. They met at the Presbyterian Church, and she was there because she had gone through a separation and was looking for a new home. And again, she's someone, a very devout Christian, and that meant a lot to her to find a home. And so the story was interesting, is that they were in a meeting, and it was a membership meeting, new members, and they were getting ready to start, and Jerry was, and everybody who had their back to the door where you'd come in because they were getting ready to start, and Leanne says she's going to open the door, and she was nervous because she was new to this church. You know, it's a big deal to then walk in, and you know, just everything she had been going through at the time, and she's not, you know, she's straight, so it wasn't that issue, but she said all of a sudden a man turned around and looked at her and then motioned to her to come in. and to sit by him. And it was Jerry. And then his partner and him invited her out for lunch after that, and they became extremely close friends.
Oh, that's wonderful. I remember my wife and I both worked with Leanne with Gilda's Club Project.
Yes, she went on to be executive director.
Yes, yes. And then ultimately left for the Bay Area.
Yes.
And a new relationship. And I unfortunately, we've lost track of her, but I just remember her being a very good person.
So absolutely.
I'm sure she was very good for Jerry. Christine, we are down to the wire for this episode of Common Threads, but many more questions to ask about this wonderful book about Jerry Crane. So I hope you can join us next week and we'll continue.
I'd love to do that.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGBU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today has been Christine Yared, and her book is Private Love, Public School, Gate Teacher Under Fire, the story of Jerry Crane and Byron Center High School. Please join us again next week here on WGVU-FM.